Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We're going to talk all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. Hey, before we get too deep into the program, we want to remind you about a couple of podcasts. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast that comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. And be sure to check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs. That is every Wednesday, and Logan and I are here with you every week for Double Coverage. Lots to talk about, Logan. We're getting closer and closer to the end of the season. At least I should say we are for Ole Miss, because it ends with the Egg Bowl on November 23rd. The Rebels going through the postseason ban right now. They still haven't heard from the NCAA. We're past that 8-week window that the NCAA says it will respond to schools after a meeting with the Committee on Infractions. So lots going on at Ole Miss right now, still waiting to hear from the NCAA. How are things with you guys?
Well, it's you're right. It's nearing the end of the regular season for State. I've got road trip to Arkansas this weekend for an early morning kick up in Fayetteville. And I'm hoping it's going to be some warmer weather. I've only been to Fayetteville twice, and it's been two of the coldest experiences I've ever had in my life. The last time I went up there for a basketball trip, Parrish, it was one. I don't even know how to say if you say 1 degree or if you say 1 degrees, but it was one there, and it had about a 15-mile-an-hour wind blowing. So it was not a fun time to be up there, and it was very cold 2 years ago when I went up there. It's the first time I've ever been to Reynolds Razorback Stadium up there. Yeah, Mississippi State, so for all these years, had played them in Little Rock, and that's kind of where I was accustomed to going. And, the Arkansas was actually the very last SEC stadium that I'd been to. Even though I'd covered Arkansas for years, I'd never actually been to Fayetteville. So 2 years ago, I wrapped up my 14th SEC stadium to visit and going to there. And it was very, very cold. I was kind of wondering why they put the visiting media on the very front row. And, usually you don't get that. And once it got cold and I realized that press box was basically like a tin shed that didn't have any insulation, I realized why the visiting media was up front. And they had some, like, stand-up, about like a bathroom heater, basically, in the very back of the press box, and that's where all the home media was. So we were kind of, got hazed into being in Fayetteville that trip. But, yeah, get that, and then you got the Egg Bowl coming up next week on Thanksgiving. So we'll get to spend Thanksgiving together again this year, Parrish. So,
speaking of the number one, Logan, you can't use the number one to describe the number of athletics directors at Arkansas right now, because Jeff Long was terminated earlier today. So that probably is the writing on the wall there for Brett Bielema. That may be coming up soon, Logan. If they haven't done it by now, I assume they're going to wait until the end of the season. You talk about that Arkansas trip. I've only covered one game in Little Rock. And, it's kind of nice to be closer to Tupelo, but I think it's worth the trip when you get up there to Fayetteville to be on the campus there. Nice campus, nice facilities, and there's a lot going on up there in Northwest Arkansas when you look at Fayetteville, Springville, and Bentonville all right there together.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the state of Arkansas for whatever reason. I'm still looking for a redeeming quality to that state, and I'm sure I'll find one eventually, and I'm always on the look. I haven't been there very much, I will say that, but I think probably I guess what's so bad is I made that trip to Little Rock so many times that just that trek from Memphis to Little Rock is one of the worst stretches of highway I've ever been on. So maybe I'm just, based it off of that. Just that, there's so many 18-wheelers and there's always road construction. It's just not a good experience. So I found some new routes to get up there to, it's made actually a little bit better. The last few times I've been to Arkansas, I've enjoyed it. I actually went to Fayetteville when 2 years ago for the first time, and went out on the little strip where they've got some bars and some restaurants and things like that. And I actually did have a really good time. Me, Ben Wade, and Michael Bonner went out one night and had a really good time before the football game last time. Won't be able to do that this time with that 11 a.m. kick the next morning. So, you know, probably have to skip out on that.
Well, I will tell you this, Logan, about a redeeming factor for Arkansas, and I'm with you on that drive from Memphis to Little Rock there on 40. It's more trucks than I ever see on any drive that I make with any sort of consistency. But if you get over there in the spring or the summer and you get off in the Ozarks and you get on the Buffalo River in a canoe, man, that's that is great stuff there. So lots of good things going on there in the Ozarks. Are you not a canoeing guy?
Well, I'm just keeping an open mind, you know, to Arkansas. I know there's got to be something, or else people wouldn't live there. So I know there's got to be some good things, and I know eventually I'll discover some of those.
All right, so the Bulldogs at Arkansas this weekend, an 11 a.m. kick Saturday morning. The Rebels are at home. Their last home game, senior night for 20 seniors. They are at home against Texas A&M in a 6 p.m. kickoff. Logan, we'll just start with the Rebels here. Of course, the biggest storylines around this program right now are still off the field, still waiting to hear from the NCAA, and with each day that passes that you don't hear a release coming from Ole Miss on that, makes me think that it's going to be right after the Egg Bowl, which I think is, maybe that helps with security. I think that's a thought there. I think this stands to be a very intense Egg Bowl with all that has gone on with Ole Miss's NCAA investigation and the feelings that have come about for both schools through that. So maybe that is a security concern, and that might be part of why they haven't heard from the NCAA. At least that's what we are hearing. The officials, Ole Miss officials, Ross Bjork, tell us that they have not heard from the NCAA at this time. So anyway, that's coming up. And, of course, the coaching search. Now, you know, Ross Bjork has told us he wants to move quickly after the games of November 25th. So you could have, NCAA report coming, the ruling from the Committee on Infractions and the coaching search, all those wheels spinning, a lot going on at one time. But that brings us back to the game on the field. Ole Miss with a 50-22 win against Louisiana Lafayette last week to climb to 5-5. The Rebels are back at 500. Two games left. If they win out, they're 7-5. That's going to be a tall task against Texas A&M. And then against State, which is a very bad matchup for Ole Miss with the way the Bulldogs run the football. But let's talk about the Texas A&M game right now. I think it is a very winnable game for Ole Miss. Logan, I want to hear what you have to say about the Aggies here in a second, because you've seen them recently with State's big win there in College Station. But just looking right now, they're going to start the pocket passer. Nick Starkle is going to get the start at quarterback. And look, anyone who has scouted Ole Miss this year knows that the Rebels are very susceptible to the run. A&M has a quality run game as well. I think it's an interesting move. Obviously, they just want to be more diverse in their offense. I think both of those quarterbacks are going to play, Logan. I think they both played against Mississippi State. You can correct me on that here in a moment if that's wrong. But what that does by making Starkle your primary quarterback is it gives Ole Miss a chance to get its pass rush involved, and that's something the Rebels have done pretty well a lot of the time this year. Especially with defensive end Marquise Haynes. And we talked with Haynes and others about that during the week. And, of course, they downplay that and don't want to put a stereotype on either quarterback. They want to be prepared for either quarterback to run or throw when they are in the game. But clearly, Nick Starkle is more of the pocket passer for Texas A&M. He's a guy who would have played more this year, no doubt. Might have been the starter, but he's been coming, recovering from an ankle injury. He threw for 418 yards last week against New Mexico. Put an asterisk there. New Mexico is ranked number 95 in passing yards allowed and number 108 in pass efficiency defense. So a little bit of a suspect secondary there for New Mexico. In three games before New Mexico, when Starkle was not the starter but did play, you know, a small body of work, he's completing 50% in those three games, 11 for 22, three touchdowns and interceptions. So you know, not a big body of work against quality opponents for Nick Starkel, but he is more of a drop back passer. He's more comfortable in the pocket. A&M is a team that has protected its quarterback just okay this year. You know, they've given up some sacks. And like I said, if they are a team that's going to drop back and pass, I think that could play in the Rebels' favor. Just don't hand it off very much. Ole Miss gave up 228 rushing yards against Louisiana Lafayette last week, and that being a team that had suspended its leading rusher. So now, as we talk about this Ole Miss defense, you go back the week before that, and they did play very well in the second half against Kentucky, limiting the Wildcats to four straight three and outs in the second half and gave the Ole Miss offense the opportunity to rally from 10 points back. Wesley McGriff, the Rebels defensive coordinator, thought Ole Miss took a step backward against Louisiana Lafayette. So maybe it was a situation of playing down to the level of competition at home. The Rebels need to be on top of their game against Texas A&M. It's going to be emotional. It's going to be senior night. 20 seniors that have won a lot of football games at Ole Miss, but not a lot of them in the last 2 years. Lots of times you get that manufactured boost of enthusiasm and emotional lift on senior night. And Matt Luke talked earlier in the week about wanting to make sure that he kept the emotions in check for his players and that those emotions were properly channeled. But it's not only about the players and their emotions. You know, there's still the uncertainty with Matt Luke and his future. I think this is a big game for Matt Luke. If he wins this game and then wins at Mississippi State or wins this Texas A&M game to guarantee a 6-6 record and then maybe puts forth you know, a good effort at Mississippi State and just doesn't get obliterated with the Bulldogs' run game. You know, I think he's in the mix for head coach, depending on how the search goes, depending on, you know, who the Rebels have a legitimate chance to hire as their coach, you know, who turns them down. Lots of factors in play here. But if Matt Luke presents a 6-6 record and a strong finish, even if he doesn't win against Mississippi State, I think he becomes a strong candidate depending on how other things play out in that Ole Miss coaching search. And, you know, we spoke with players earlier in the week. They're aware of that. You know, you hear players, Logan, say all the time, oh, we don't pay attention to this or we don't read that or we don't watch that. They know what's going on and they know how important these two games are to Matt Luke, and they want to put their best foot forward for Matt Luke. They want to finish strong and they want to win for themselves, but they understand what's at stake for their head coach right now and for these assistant coaches. So we'll see. I think there will be a lot of emotions on display for Ole Miss and Texas A&M Saturday night. And Tommy Tuberville's back in the house. He'll be handling color commentary for ESPN2, the former Ole Miss coach, doing the broadcast thing there at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium Saturday night.
Yeah, and, you know, this year's probably not the best year to be trying to hire a coach. I mean, there's already right now three coaching vacancies in the SEC, and the season's not even over with yet. I mean, so you got the one at Ole Miss, one at Tennessee, and the one at Florida. And like I said, there could be a few more added to that mix. We mentioned Brett Bielema up at Arkansas is kind of on the hot seat. Kevin Sumlin, once again, you know, it depends on how this year finishes up. You know, he kind of stays on the hot seat, you know, every year. So, yeah, we'll have to kind of see how he finishes up. And in years past, they haven't finished well. So we'll have to see how the rest of the year goes with him. I know there's a lot of high expectations in College Station. But mentioning Texas A&M, I did see him a few weeks ago at Kyle Field. And Kellen Mond played most of that game at quarterback. Nick Starkel came in there right at the very end. The game was kind of decided at that point, and they were throwing the ball. And he did connect on a 70-yard touchdown in that game. You know, they were trying to connect some big shots during the ball game. Kellen Mond just couldn't get it done. He couldn't even, you know, either overthrowing the receiver or whatever. But they were trying to hit Christian Kirk on some big plays and just never could connect. And eventually Nick Starkel came in and finally connected on one. He also threw a – you know, a big pick six also late in that ball game. So, you know, it's kind of a up and down performance from Nick Starkel. So I really didn't get to see just a whole lot of him. You're right. I mean, he finished about 50% in that game. I think he was 8 out of 15. Let's see here, 133 yards, one touchdown. and one pick six. So, you know, kind of a mixed bag there. So I didn't really get to see just a whole lot of them. I do know, you know, Texas A&M really likes to get after the quarterback. They were, I think, one of the top teams with sacks going into that ball game. Mississippi State's offensive line, that's kind of one of their strengths this year. And they only gave up one sack during that ball game. So, you know, Mississippi State was able to protect Nick Fitzgerald, and they were able to get some things going with him and Aris Williams running the ball. So, you know, if Ole Miss, I know Ole Miss has struggled some in the running game. I know it's improved a little bit over what it was a year ago, but you know, if Ole Miss can establish the run, you know, to help set up that passing game, it's kind of right the opposite for Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Ole Miss is their strength is throwing the football, and they need to keep things honest, you know, by running it a little bit. Mississippi State's right the opposite. You know, they need to pass the ball a little bit to set up that running game, and you know, that's something they did this past weekend against Alabama. Mississippi State played Alabama right down to the wire. Really good, probably one of State's best performances of the year, and were able to, you know, establish the run early on in that ball game and really whipped Alabama up front. And that's something I was surprised to see. I thought Alabama was going to run away with that ball game. Alabama won 51-3 a year ago in Tuscaloosa, and then, you know, come back this year and State, you know, played them right down the wire, you know, made some plays through the passing game. They were out a lot, you know, I think three out of their top four receivers did not play in that ball game. And the one that did only caught one pass and was kind of limited in Keith Mixon. So Donald Gray was out of that game. Gabe Miles was out of that game. Malik Deer has been out for the entire season. They actually had to dress out some tight ends to play wide receiver just to have enough guys to rotate through and keep some fresh guys on the field. But, you know, there's some younger guys that are stepping up in the receiving game. Reggie Todd, Jamal Couch, Osiris Mitchell, Dedrick Thomas. There's some guys that they really, you know, weren't dependent on to be their top receivers this year. They're kind of in some supporting roles, and they've kind of had to step up and be the guys so far this year. And the tight ends helped out as well. Jordan Thomas at 6'5", 280 pounds. I actually wrote a story about him in today's Daily Journal about him moving out to wide receiver at that size. It's pretty amazing to see a guy that size lined up at wide receiver. And he actually has a lot of speed to be that size. He's very athletic, and you can read more about that in that story. But, you know, they really have had some guys step up. Justin Johnson, Farad Green, at tight end, have stepped up. They used some backs out of the backfield to help out with the passing game. But, you know, Nick Fitzgerald didn't have the best night throwing the football, didn't have the best night running the football, but he was effective in some areas. You know, it wasn't he didn't turn the ball over, which is something he has been doing a lot lately. He took care of the football. He was able to make some plays with his feet. Aris Williams was a workhorse, 22 carries, I believe it was. Nearly, I think he finished with 97 yards, had two touchdowns. He's the first running back to score two touchdowns against Alabama since Ezekiel Elliott back in 2015. So he did something that not many people have been able to do. And but it came down to the wire, and Alabama scores right there. State had Alabama push back, 3rd and 15. And they brought the house on a blitz, and that's something they had worked so many times throughout the night. They were able to get Jalen Hurts. They had five sacks in that ball game, so they were able to get to the quarterback, affect him. But, you know, you live by the blitz, and sometimes you die by the blitz, and that's exactly what happened on that play. Calvin Ridley catches it, converts the first down. Then the next play they score on with 25 seconds left. State actually had a chance. They had a couple of Hail Mary tosses that – yeah, they had a pass interference on the very first one that moved them up, and then Nick Fitzgerald threw it too far, and it went out of the back of the end zone. But the atmosphere the other night, Parrish, it was unbelievable in Starkville. It was really one of the best college football atmospheres that I've seen, and I saw that from a lot of Alabama writers. A lot of those guys wrote about just how impressive the atmosphere was, and it's kind of been that way for the last couple of years here in Starkville, but I guess more and more people are starting to see that. It's not the same old Starkville that he used to go to. I mean, I remember going there as a kid, and, you know, people would just walk up and hand you some tickets. I mean, you didn't even have to worry about buying them. But now it's a tough ticket to get, and it's an incredible atmosphere. It's really cool how that sort of organically started to happen. And, you know, this week they've got to, you know, go up to Fayetteville. That's a place they haven't played at very often. And I think this is only the fifth time they've ever played there. So it's going to be a unique experience. Arkansas is a little down this year. And State's still got to do what they've got to do.
Hey, Logan, I got home from Oxford last week in time to watch State and Alabama, and honestly, I intended to get home and flip around to the other games that were going on. You know, we don't get to flip around games on TV, just a whole lot on Saturdays, but the game was so good there in Starkville that I stayed with it the whole way through. Now, State's last possession on offense while the game was still tied. The television commentary was critical of Dan Mullen, saying the play calling had gone too conservative there. What did he have to say about that after the game?
He didn't have a whole lot to say about anything after the game. You could tell he was very, very disappointed. But they didn't win that ball game, and I actually missed that series, Parrish. I was trying to get down to the field, and it was a three and out. And so I actually missed. By the time I got around and got down to the field, they were lining up to punt. So I actually missed that, and I did see Alabama score and drive there to end the game. But I missed that sequence of plays, and I'm assuming he just ran the ball three plays in a row and didn't go forward on fourth and short. That's what I read in the play-by-play, I think, anyway. But, I said he was very disappointed after the ball game. He was kind of short with some answers. I asked him one question and got one-word answer from him. I asked about Brandon Bryant's health. Brandon Bryant goes down on the third play of the second half and didn't return in that ball game. And I asked, did he have an update on Brandon Bryant? He said, nope.
I thought Brad Locke was sent down there to ask about injuries, Logan. Look, shifting gears a little bit, basketball. Tell us where the Bulldogs are right now.
Well, they're 1-0 right now. They beat Alabama State the other night, kind of in convincing fashion, 96-68. Alabama State wasn't the best opponent in the world, but State kind of needed that. You know, they needed to get out and kind of established themselves. They played some tough opponents early on in some games, and it was really just kind of a strange game. It was a doubleheader. It was at 5:30 in the afternoons when the men played, and the women played after that, had the banner raised in ceremony. But there really just wasn't just a whole lot of things that stood out to me. I mean, there was a lot of guys that had good games. Quindary Weatherspoon at 17. Eric Holman probably had his best performance off the bench. He ended up with 18 points, 11 rebounds in 21 minutes. And, that was kind of something I think that was only his third career double-double. So, to have that type of production from him was very positive. Nick Weatherspoon had a good debut, 11 points off the bench. EJ Datcher had 11 points. Tyson Carter had 11 points. Eli Wright had 12 points off the bench. So a lot of contributions from a lot of different guys. But like I said, it was just the first game. They haven't played since then, so we'll have to kind of see. They don't play again until Saturday. So, it's a kind of a long stretch, so they can kind of get some things done. They'll actually play a lot of games over a short span of time over the next week or so. They got Florida A&M coming up Saturday at home. They play Green Bay Monday at home, and then turn around and play Stephen F. Austin Wednesday at home. So three games within the next week for Mississippi State, all starting on Saturday. So it'd be a stretch of games there.
The good news in that Green Bay game is Aaron Rodgers is still out. The Rebels are 2-0, Logan. They play again Friday night at 6 against Georgia State. They've played some pretty good teams here so far. Louisiana Lafayette is a team that won 21 games last year, returns a lot of production. They're going to win a lot of games. In the Sun Belt, the Rebels were able to win that game going away on opening night last Friday. They come back Monday against Eastern Kentucky. They win by 10. Never really were able to blow the doors off of Eastern there at the end. I thought that might be a game where the Rebels got a lot of separation. They got the lead up to 18. Eastern comes back. Eastern had a very good five player in the post, very athletic kid who gave the Rebels some problems. And he was good enough that they got a lot of NBA scout requests to come and see him play that night. So we're seeing what we thought we would see from Ole Miss right now. Not a lot of post scoring. Dominique Olenicek, the transfer, 7-footer, who played at Drake 2 years ago, a native of Poland. He's a guy that's going to help this team. He is not Sebastian Saiz. He's going to be a rim protector. He's going to block some shots. He's fairly athletic around the basket. He'll score when the floor is spread and they throw it in there to him that way. He doesn't have very strong and physical hands right now, Logan, and he gets the ball knocked away from him quite a bit. So that's something that they need to work on. But lots of good guard play from this team. We've seen a lot of scoring from DeAndre Burnett in two games, from freshman Devontae Shuler, the grad transfer from Memphis, Markel Crawford, is playing well. Lots of depth among the guards, lots of guys who can get it done that way. Lots of enthusiasm for this Ole Miss men's basketball team right now, and there should be. They're off to a good start to play again Friday, 6 o'clock, Georgia State, there at the Pavilion. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast every Wednesday and Friday, and Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs every Wednesday. And Logan and I will be back here with you next week for another round of Double Coverage.